1-1 pitch. Swing and a drive. Deep to right field. Way up there. Way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager! That just happened! Thank you very much!
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
All right, welcome back, Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Thanks for being here. Every time I hear the open, I mean, it's become the podcast open for me, but I wonder if I should change it for the new year. I'm willing to take your votes on that. Should I change the podcast open for the new year? Should it be something I change a little more often, or do you like the steady hand of the consistent podcast open? Just let me know. I don't know. I'm toying with the idea. If I do change it, I think I will include this. If I don't include this, I'll make sure to play it a lot. I've spent a lot of this offseason going through the archives and making things digital that weren't. And I have come across some gems that I'll unleash throughout the season, but this one can't wait. I love this. Here it is.
Take me to the ball game. I want to see the Amps. The Mariners are playing hardball. Get it again and again and again. Get it again.
Yes, I wish it was a full song, but that's all I have. But you'll be hearing that a lot, so I hope you enjoy it. Okay, now down to business. So we'll talk about the two-game split squad yesterday a little bit. Aaron Goldsmith is going to be by. We'll talk about camp a little bit, and then Rupert Jones at the very end. So that's what we have on this podcast. And, so yesterday, Felix Hernandez took the hill for the first time this spring. That was good to see.
And now the 0-2 pitch and a swing and a miss and a breaking ball for strike three. So Felix Hernandez, his first strikeout of the spring. He fans Tapia. And now two outs for the Rockies here in the top half of the first. Here's the pitch and a swing and a miss. Strike three. The King striking out Enoa. He strikes out the side here in the top half of the second. And Felix Hernandez gets out of a jam and a nice round of applause for Felix as he walks off the field.
So he makes his spring debut, throws 50 pitches, goes 2 1/3 innings in his debut. Taiwan Walker threw in the other ball game for the Mariners. He threw 66 pitches and seemed fairly pleased about his start.
How'd you feel out there?
Felt good. Really didn't get my load out there today. Cutting some balls off, but arm felt good.
Are you where you want to be at this point in the spring?
Yeah, I'm getting there. I mean, far about. Let's say a couple more starts, I'll be fully where I want to be. But right now, everything's getting better.
There's Taiwan Walker after his start yesterday. Boog Powell in center field made a nice catch, too. Really nice catch.
Swinging a fly ball to left field. This sends Powell twisting back, chasing it, going after it out of the track. He reaches over his head, and he's able to make the catch. Powell over his right shoulder, crashing into the wall, is somehow able to put on the squeeze and hold on.
So good stuff there. Powell making a nice catch. Lind hitting his first home run of the spring. Gutierrez hitting a home run as well, getting a couple of hits. Mariners lost both ball games. One to the Rockies, 6-4, and they lost to the Diamondbacks, 8-3. So they're losing both split squads yesterday. Mariners get back at it today. They take on the Angels in Tempe. Cody Martin scheduled to start for the Mariners. Andrew Heaney is going to get the call for the Angels, the lefty we talked about in the last podcast for the Angels. Speaking of camp, spring training, and the voice you just heard, we're going to welcome in Aaron Goldsmith in just a moment. A little warning. I don't know if warning is the right word, but information that will make a little more sense once you hear it. We actually talked last week. This was supposed to be on a podcast last week that was just never came out. So you're hearing it now. So that's why we don't address bullpen injuries, especially with Furbush. We do address a couple bullpen injuries, but the Furbush injury we won't talk about. And also Sanchez when we talk about first base. But we talk a lot about camp, some of the position battles, the general feeling camp. Good stuff, as always, from Aaron Goldsmith. We are going to talk more in depth about the bullpen situation coming up later this week as things get pretty interesting now with Furbush having a setback, obviously a couple other injuries in the pen, so we'll dive more into that as we move through this week. But right now, he's back. And let's welcome him back, well, the only way we know how.
To the six, all even at two, and for the play-by-play, here's Aaron.
They're booing me, Rick.
Not you.
That was right on cue.
If they knew you, they would never boo you, buddy.
1-2 pitch, swing and a miss. Oh, did he get tied up? That was dirty from Felix.
Picks up the dirties, washes them, and brings them back fresh.
And we got Aaron Goldsmith here, hair just glistening in the sunlight, so it's pretty distracting.
I'm a happily married man with a child on the way, and I love King Perry. That is me in a nutshell, and I talk about the Mariners on the radio every night. So
kind of let it eat.
Oh, breaking news. The bees are still there.
You look up above the mound, and it looks like you're staring up to the mothership, like you could be beamed up at any moment. That white roof with all the circles and the scaffolding.
Way out of here to right field. Thank you very much.
And we get to welcome back to the podcast popular Mariners broadcaster Aaron Goldsmith from Arizona. Aaron, it's great to have you back on Mariners Pod.
Ah, yes, at Mariners Pod, G-Man. I like that a lot. It's got a nice ring to it, doesn't it?
It does. I like it. Mariners Pod. We really sound cool on the podcast now, I think.
I totally agree. And do you have any idea what the followership is up to at this point? Last I saw, we were low triple digits on this one, G-Man. Yeah. I'm expecting 1,000 by the time we break camp.
Whoa, by the time camp? Okay. Well, we have some work to do then. That's only like 3 weeks away. I'm sure it can
happen.
Yeah,
well, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, you may have to lend a hand in that, but yeah, that, I think we have a shot.
We'll create some accounts to follow it, don't worry.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea. Create account for every 1985 St. Louis Cardinal. Oh, look, I'm being followed by her now. Excellent.
That's a great idea. I like it a lot.
Daryl Porter, he's following me. Perfect. Yay. So how's everything going?
Well, you know, G-Man, it's warm. It is sunny. There's Mariners baseball being played. So I would say everything is pretty great here in Peoria. It's obviously a lot of new faces, both in the clubhouse and in the offices around Peoria, around the Peoria Sports Complex and the Mariners side of things. A lot of coaches, a lot of new coaches as well. But there's, I think, all the reports that people back home were hearing about kind of the vibe, the overall vibe in camp, I don't think they're really blown too much out of proportion. I think they're all positive. It's been this pretty light and really pretty entertaining feel to camp, and I mean that in a good way. I think guys are really enjoying getting to know each other from as much as I can tell, and we're hearing some pretty funny stories about these kind of team meetings in the morning, which I think they might be more for entertainment and get to know each other than they are in terms of the chalk talk. Although I do know, talking to some of the guys, that there's certainly a lot of that that happens as well. But you're as you are every year with a 25-man roster, it's kind of an arranged marriage. But this year with more cast of characters than in recent years, just because all the new faces. But I think the coaches overall, led by Service, of course, I think they're doing a great job from what I can pick up on, just setting the tone, making sure that this is a camp where people are kind of getting to know each other, both on the field and off the field. And we're seeing a lot of happy ball players, which is a good thing. And you can only judge it so much while you're down here in this bubble that is spring training. But I don't think you could ask for any more than what we've seen so far in terms of just the overall feel and tone of camp.
That's pretty interesting, camp, too. Because you alluded to it, all the new faces, and usually what that sort of thing means, there's a lot of competition for a lot of jobs. But really, when you look at the Mariners roster on paper, there's not a lot of that competition. It looks like a lot of jobs are already locked up. Obviously, we're looking at the fifth starter very closely. The Paxton Carnes battle is a good one to watch. Backup first baseman, utility role, some bullpen issues to sort out. But really, not that many openings, which makes it, I think, a unique camp as well.
Yeah, you're right. The Paxton Carnes one probably takes center stage in terms of the one that has the most interest, mainly because it has two of the more recognizable players when it comes to these positions. I mean, the bullpen, the front end of the bullpen, these are most of the guys we're talking about here are new faces and new names to most Mariner fans. And the bullpen guys are always so tough to evaluate in spring training. They're coming in for an inning, and who knows exactly who they're facing at that point. And a lot of pitchers have will tell you that it's a hard environment here in Arizona to pitch in, especially if you're used to throwing out where the humidity is and the Grapefruit League. But this is it's not an embarrassment of riches. Maybe it's not quite that far, but the Mariners' rotation is in good shape just from the simple fact of its depth. I don't know, Gary, the last time you can remember that the Mariners went to camp with really six bona fide starting pitchers for five spots. I mean, how many times have we been just days, weeks into camp, and you're already down to three starters, and for whatever reason, namely injury, and now you're scrambling? Chris Young comes to mind right away from a couple of seasons ago. But, you know, Paxton has options, so that certainly makes him an attractive fit to start the season in AAA because of that. While on the other end of the spectrum, you go out and you acquire Nathan Karns, a guy who doesn't have a deep track record by any means, so let's not forget that, but is coming up a successful season last year with Tampa Bay. So I don't know about you, Gary, but I still have not found a great answer from a manager or a general manager or a coach or a scout as to how exactly you go about evaluating any type of player, position, starting pitcher, reliever, in spring training, because it just, this is not a good test kitchen for so many reasons. And when it comes to what's going to happen in early April on opening day in Arlington and then moving forward into the regular season. So this is a job I'm so grateful that all I have to do is sit up there in the booth and watch it play out, because how many times have we seen both guys go out there and pitch lights out, and you just kind of, there's so much more that goes into it than just what we see from the stands or up in the booth, the level of knowledge that the coaches have in the dugout and the depth into which they're looking into things is so far beyond what we see. That's for sure the most talked about competition in camp is Karns versus Paxton and seeing how these two guys are going to fare.
And you make a great point about depth, because really at the end of the day, we'll talk about this competition now, but as we move through the season, both of those guys will get their share of starts, because that's the way rotations work. I mean, the Mariners had that year, 2003, where they had five guys start during the course of the season. But that, I mean, that's against all odds. You're going to need 7-8 starters during the course of the season. And when it's all said and done, I think they're both going to get their share of starts, because that's just the way things develop, with guys getting hurt, guys struggling. That's the nature of rotations.
Yeah, and you know, the dynamic here between Karns and Paxton, it's an interesting one from the standpoint of Karns. I think we have a pretty good idea what he's going to be and what he is. You know, even just seeing him from afar, even though he has pitched only a handful of innings in a Mariners uniform in spring training, I mean, Karns is going to be a real steady Eddie contributor in the middle to the back of your rotation, depending on who else is filling out the front end. Karns is going to be a guy who's going to eat some good innings for you and is going to be there presumably every 5 days. Paxton, on the other hand, has the potential to be absolutely elite. I don't think there's anybody who has seen him pitch who would doubt that for a second. I mean, this is a guy who, depending on who else is in that rotation, if you put it in a vacuum and you don't put him in there with Felix and with Kuma, I mean, if Paxton is healthy and is a guy who can give you 32 starts a year, this is a guy who, if he kind of lives up to what we've seen in spurts, this is a top of the rotation guy, let alone a lefty throwing 97. So it's just kind of funny how you would automatically think, well, Paxton's your guy. Well, Paxton obviously has to prove that he can put this together over the course of a full season. He has to be able to prove the hardest thing, which is to prove health. Because certainly none of the things, the injuries that he has had are not preventable injuries. Certainly, especially the fingernail. I don't think a manicure was the issue for James. And both these guys, Nathan Karns, who we've gotten to know a little bit, and James Paxton, are as likable and as nice and as kind of people as you could possibly ask for. So from that standpoint, you hate to see one guy win and one guy lose. But you're absolutely right, Gary. We're going to see both these guys pitching for the Mariners. But there's a certain level of of pride and ownership that you want to be the guy to break camp with the team. And this is the main story that we're all really looking for this spring training. And, you know, while we're talking about it, the bullpen is taking a hit.
Yeah.
A couple of injuries to guys who Ryan Cook, Evan Scribner, both those guys with kind of some tricky injuries, kind of the lat area. Mm-hmm. And that's a setback for both of those guys. So, the theory from Jerry Dipoto this offseason has been a pretty clear one, is form a mosh pit of relievers who are coming off of down years who can compete, and you hope that one or two of them hits. And that's not a crazy theory.
No, I think that's it's a well-played theory. I think that's was a smart way to go about it, and it's too bad because I think both of those players, well, they still have a chance to contribute, but it does open the door for a couple of others as we move through spring training.
And, you know, not to jump back and forth, but to get back to Paxton, one thing that does come to mind, both of his starts so far, and his last one, he got roughed up a little bit, his velocity has not been what we're used to seeing. We're used to mid to upper 90s from James, and it's been more like 90 to 92. Now, people should know there are no radar guns in the ballpark. We're relying simply on pitch effects on game day. But I do think that the velocity, although the pitch tracker is not always accurate, especially in spring training, I do believe the velocity is pretty accurate. And I was talking to Mike Blowers about this the other day. I mean, Blow wants to see, and I can understand why, because I asked him this question. He wants to see James blowing it in there mid-90s, 95, 96, mm-hmm. a couple of outings before the end of spring training. And so you can understand James not maybe letting it loose 100% early in camp. But, I mean, I think that velocity is going to be, in addition to just getting outs, I think Scott Servais and Mel Stottlemyre Jr. and everybody else are going to want to see that velocity be what we're used to seeing it, because obviously when you're a lefty coming straight over the top at 96, that's a game changer. Yeah. So that's something for people to keep an eye out on.
No doubt. And it's funny. That's why I'm so fascinated by this battle, because I actually think Carnes has a pretty high ceiling as well. He's a late bloomer in terms of his growth into Major League Baseball, but I think he profiles as a guy who could give you 200 strikeouts in this season.
Well, yeah, I mean, you look at the strikeout numbers last year. What was he, about a strikeout per inning?
Yeah. And if he gets 200 innings, I think he could be a 200-inning, 200-strikeout. Now, I realize there's a lot of projection to that. I mean, it's not something that he's done in his major league career, but I think he has that kind of potential when you start looking at kind of the numbers underneath. I mean, there's a reason I love the trade at the time. I think he's got some real potential to be a contributor at a high level in the Mariners' rotation.
No, I agree. And I think he's a guy that, as we mentioned, the track record is not deep for Carnes. Right. You talk about a late bloomer. This is a guy who thought his career was over before it even started. I mean, he missed the first couple of years of his minor league career with a really very serious shoulder injury, and then had to prove that he was healthy with the Nationals, who drafted him, and fight for a spot after being really a pretty high draft pick. Nothing's been handed to Nathan Carnes. And I've had a chance to talk to him a little bit informally at his locker here in Peoria once or twice. And I mean, he is embracing the competition. Not that he wants to beat James Paxton, but he's embracing this as from a standpoint of, this is exactly what he's done his entire career. So this mm-hmm. is not something that's new to him whatsoever. And ironically, his locker, I believe, is right next to James's, or at least maybe Taiwan's right between them. So these guys are they're getting to know each other pretty quickly.
So I want to talk about first base as well, because Lee has made an impact early on, not only with that home run that you were on the call for, which I really enjoyed, because it sounded like it essentially, as the ball cleared the fence and almost cleared the berm completely, your call almost turned into a laugh, because that thing was just mashed. But he's made a pretty big impact. He's opened some eyes early and also played, from the looks of things, pretty good at first base. I mean, he's played pretty well out there from what we've seen.
I couldn't believe that home run did not land on the sidewalk behind the berm. That's where I thought it was going. I mean, that was one of the most mammoth home runs I have seen in a long time. Granted, it was about the fourth game of spring training. But in any event, you're right. It's funny, because I've talked with Shannon a lot about this, and she has seen Lee get extra work at first base on the backfields. And with what he did at the time of this recording today, Tuesday, in Goodyear, I mean, he had two spectacular plays at first base. Got a runner out at home and was able to dive off to the side and stab a ball that looked like was ticketed for right field. He moved much better than I ever would have thought he would, would have. I think the issue, obviously, for Deho Lee is going to be breaking balls, off-speed pitches. What can you do with that? Because he got tied up in surprise on those. And as Scott Servais said, hey, man, if you look at this guy, this enormous human being swinging a toothpick, walking inside the batter's box, you going to throw him a fastball down the middle? Probably not.
Yeah.
And so I'm very intrigued by him, mainly just because of Gary, he is enormous. Yeah. I mean, I hadn't put eyes on him until he walked past me in the clubhouse a couple of days ago. He is a behemoth of a man, and I'll be interested to see how it plays out and, you know, how serious of a spot he can vie for in this platoon with Lynn in first base, because there's no doubt that that's a big question mark for the Mariners. And we've seen teams like the A's do this, where if you get a guy like Lynn and a guy like fill in the blank on the other side, you can suddenly have a guy or a duo that would profile as a $20-25 million a year first baseman.
Yep.
That you're using it. I mean, the one that comes to mind right away is what the A's did with Norris and Vogt as catchers a couple of years ago before Norris was traded to the Padres. I mean, they had the best power hitting catcher in baseball. It was just two different guys. So who's that going to be? Is it going to be Romero? Is it going to be Deho Lee? We haven't seen Romero a ton at first base, especially since he took a ball off the knee, which looks like he's pretty well recovered from at this point. So there are a number of candidates for that, and that's going to be something that they're going to have to sort out the rest of the way here in camp.
No, I think you make a great point, because it's funny when you look at it, because Lind, I mean, he is absolutely mashed righties in his career and to a surprising degree. I mean, some of his lefty numbers have kind of dragged down his overall numbers, but if you just isolate what he's done against righties in his career, it's really staggering. I mean, last year his OPS was better than a lot of the elite players, McCutcheon, Posey, guys like that, if you isolate it just against righties. I mean, that's why when you talk about a platoon, if you put him with a Montero or a Lee or Sanchez or Romero, whoever wins the job, I mean, you're right. That is a chance to be a very productive spot when you put the two together.
Yeah, that's why you got to, for the other half of that marriage has to be found while we're here in Arizona. And,
yeah.
I mean, hey, Mariners fans, remember, we went into camp last year, the Mariners did, and there were a couple of platoons, right, that the Mariners were kind of banking on, even though for whatever reason – nobody wanted to call it a platoon. It was a platoon. And it didn't work out. Yeah, that's exactly what it was. It didn't work out. I mean, the idea of a platoon is a very attractive one if you have the right personnel.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you really need to have two guys. You can't just have one. And right now, the Mariners have one, and they're hoping they can find the second part of it. Because when a platoon works, it's phenomenal. But I think it's one of those things that you see it happen. When you do see it happen successfully, it stands out so much, and it makes it look like a much easier thing than it is to actually have happen. Because you need to have those guys. Not only do you have to have two people who complement each other, lefty and righty, but then you have to have two guys who are comfortable not playing every day and having the ability to perform at an everyday level when they play, say, three or four times a week.
And
so,
yeah, and this is when I think it gets really tricky when you're talking about roster construction, because you're looking at trying to make a decision like this knowing that you're probably going to lose two of the guys or one of the other guys depending on who you pick. You know, Lee has an opt-out and Montero's out of options. So it's difficult when you're making a decision like this knowing that you could lose a guy or two at the same time.
Exactly. I mean, I think the option, the same thing that works in the favor of sending Paxton down, having an option, you're working against it with Montero not having an option.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think it's so hard. This would be a good question for us to ask Jerry DePoto or Scott Services sometime. If you look at Montero and Stefan Romero, I mean, these are two guys who have not proven that they can now and that they can perform on a daily basis in the major leagues. Mm-hmm. And I mean, in Romero's case, he just hasn't been in the major leagues all that long. So I mean, it almost sounds like I'm knocking the guy. It's just he hasn't had the chance. When he has been up, he hasn't always been able to perform.
Right.
And I mean, Mike Blowers, I'm sure, will be the first to say that one of the toughest jobs in baseball is being a bench guy who's not playing every day. And I mean, you're not relegated to a backup utility role where you might only play a couple times a week. But nevertheless, I just think it's so tough to see a young guy in a situation like that, kind of like a Chris Taylor being the utility man, which he's certainly in the competition for that. I mean, it just strikes me as such a difficult position. You know, this is something Lind has done. This is how he makes a living. I mean, he's a veteran. He's been doing this for years and years and years. What was it? I want to say, Gary, like 2 years ago, Lind had literally like 6 at-bats against a lefty.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how extreme it is. So you're right. There are a lot of handcuffs on this, both in terms of the roster construction and also the personnel and what you're hoping, what limited track record they might have. And I don't know about you. I mean, even though Montero has been in the big leagues a number of times over the last handful of years, I still think he's got a very limited track record in the major leagues.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any question about that. So, and that's going to be the toughest one, I think, potentially to figure out, because you don't have right now, at least, you don't have a clear-cut home run option.
No, and that's what makes it so tough. And, you know, only a couple weeks, really, to make the decision, which is going to be pretty interesting. Well, anything else before you take off? Hopefully we get at least a chance one more time during spring training to chat before the team heads up north. But anything that we missed?
Boy, I think I'm trying to think if there's any other news from the complex. But I think, no, G-Man, I think we hit on everything. You know, at Mariners Pod, give it a follow. And
find
work
to get
on the podcast.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's the informal goal. But find work getting the podcast up and running for spring training. And, well, hopefully, G-Man, we're going to see you down here one of these days to soak in some rays and watch the Mariners baseball.
Sunshine, that sounds pretty nice.
I'm sure it does.
Well, thanks for the time. As always, it went longer than I told you it would, but I guess that always happens. But thanks.
No, that's more my fault than yours. You got it, bud. Good talking to you.
Rupert Jones, center fielder, Kansas City, is the first choice by the Seattle Mariners in the expansion draft.
I came in right on time. I got picked up in the expansion draft, and I got to a city that really wanted baseball and really loved baseball. And the people there are fantastic. We have a nice turnout. We got a nice team. My team played with a lot of heart and desire. And I'm telling you, I'm having the most fun I've had in my life this year.